Chapter 9. For Loras Grimm and his companions, Stormcasts and Sylvaneth alike, the trek across the frozen sea was a seemingly endless gauntlet of skirmishes and battles. With the fog and snow to conceal them, the first they were aware of enemies was when they were almost upon them. War herds of beastmen, tribes of marauders, and packs of diseased demons infested the ice, prowling among the frozen waves in search of their prey. One after another, Grimm's warriors struck out against the scattered warbands of Torglug's legion, cutting down many of them and routing the survivors. Not all they encountered were foes, however. Several times Grimm discovered clutches of Sylvaneth or retinues of hallowed knights. Some had been separated from the entourage that attended the Lady of Vines. Others were survivors from the battle at the bridges. Grimm was especially pleased when Prosecutor Prime Tegris and two of his winged warriors dipped down out of the storm-racked sky to join his disparate company. He had thought all of the prosecutors slain in their aerial battle with the plague drones. It cheered him to find that Tegris had endured. A greater discovery lay ahead, however. As he led his followers across the ice, he heard a friendly horn blast. It was the trumpet of a knight heralder, a call to arms for all Stormcasts. Grimm led his small army through the dips and valleys of the frozen waves, urging them towards the sound. As the sound grew louder, other noises rang out above the moaning winter wind, the crash of blades and the roar of battle. Rushing onwards, Grimm finally saw figures moving within the fog. A few yards more and they changed from misty shadows to shapes of flesh and metal. Some were the grotesque minions of Torglug, a horde of half-naked tribesmen, with a few of the hideous Chosen mixed among them. It was the foes these disciples of disease fought that gave Grimm new hope. They were Stormcasts, but not of the Hallowed Knights. The armor they wore was white, blue, and gold. The symbols they displayed on their shields were those of sun and moon. These were warriors from the Knights Excelsior. As Morbus had postulated, another storm host, or at least elements from one, had descended upon the Sea of Serpents to aid them in defending the Lady of Vines and protecting the Queen Seed of Alariel. There were scores of Stormcasts, a mixed body of liberators, judicators, and paladins, struggling to turn back hundreds of Torglug's warriors. In their midst, resplendent in his elaborate armor, stood a winged knight Venator, a deadly realm hunter's bow clenched in his mailed fists, a shrieking star eagle sweeping out to rake its master's enemies with vicious talons. At the knight Venator's signal, the knight heralder raised the horn to his mask and blew again the rallying call, inflaming the hearts of his comrades as they strove to turn back the pestilent tide of chaos which crashed against them. The Knights Excelsior were more than equal to overwhelming their enemy, given time. Foot by foot, yard by yard, they were trying to fight their way clear. Like the Hallowed Knights before them, they'd been dispatched to Gyron with a purpose far greater than simply slaughtering the slaves of Nurgle. They were trying to guard Alariel. But to do so, they had to break free of Torglug's barbarians. Reflexively, Grimm started to raise the stump of his hand to signal his warriors with the warding lantern he'd carried into battle so many times before. Instead, he turned and shouted to his followers, ordering them to the attack. Falling upon the marauders and chaos warriors from the rear, they would either drive them full into the shield wall of the Knights Excelsior or else throw them into complete panic. The mortals, who marched under Torglug's banner, were both determined and depraved, but they didn't adapt well to surprises on the battlefield. Without a firm hand to throw them back into the fray, once they scattered, it would take them a long time to regroup.
"Only the faithful!"
Grimm cried out, signalling his warriors to charge. The Sylvaneth joined in the assault, a war grove of tree creatures slamming into the marauders with the fury of an avalanche and hurling the wreckage of broken barbarians far into their own ranks. Grimm's liberators struck next, slashing and bludgeoning dozens of marauders before they were even aware the silver warriors were there. When a fly-headed champion tried to rally his tribesmen and mount some sort of reprisal, the Hallowed Knights locked their shields and presented an unbroken wall of Sigmarite to the pestilent throng. An arrow from the Night Venator struck down the mutant leader, searing through his body and leaving him a smouldering husk on the ice. The shrieking Star Eagle dived down with raking claws to tear at the faces of the diseased marauders. As the barbarians tried to batter and slash their way through, the liberators struck them down with overhand smashes of their hammers and stabbing thrusts of their swords. Judicators joined in the assault, protecting the flanks of Grimm's attackers with deadly volleys of arrows. Confusion and panic reigned among Torglug's warriors as they found themselves being inexorably squeezed between the Knights Excelsior on one side and Grimm's mixed force of Hallowed Knights and Sylvaneth on the other. The pressure was finally too much for the Disciples of Disease, their putrid courage failing. As the barbarians broke, the Sylvaneth fell upon them with vengeful ire, tearing into them with their wooden claws and spear-like branches. The Stormcasts kept back, allowing their inhuman allies to slake their need for retribution. Across the heaps of enemy dead, the Hallowed Knights greeted their fellows of the Knights Excelsior. Their commander, the Knight Venator, bowed his head in salute as he approached Grimm.
"Well met, Lord Castellant," the Knight Venator said. "We were sent to the Jade Kingdoms to render aid to your storm host, but it seems that you have helped us instead."
Grimm returned the Knight Venator's salute.
"It is the fortune of battle that few plans unfold as they are designed. But your intervention is timely. The fighting has drawn us far from the one whose protection is our duty. It is imperative that we find her before the enemy. If your Knights Excelsior would help us in that purpose, Knight Venator..."
"Geomachus," the Knight Venator said, providing his name.
"I am acting commander, Lord Castellant. Our leader, Knight Xeros Diamar, has gone to detain Torglug's vanguard. My assignment was to prevent reinforcements from reaching the warlord."
Moving to Grimm's side, Lord Relictor Morbus shook his head, a scowl twisting the exposed part of his face.
"Diamar should have brought his full strength against Torglug. It is dangerous to underestimate that diseased scum."
He waved his hammer, indicating the battered condition of the Hallowed Knights, the many wounds they had already suffered. Geomachus took a step back when he noted the grisly condition of Grimm's disfigurement.
"We should hasten to my lord's side, then,"
Geomachus declared, his Star Eagle shrieking in sympathy with its master's agitation. Talon reflected the bird's agitation, whining in turn.
"None here has greater desire to see Torglug brought down than I," Grimm said, calming the Griffhound. "But such isn't our duty here. We are charged to defend the Radiant Queen, and right now that means protecting the one who carries Alariel's soul pod, the Lady of Vines."
"You would leave my Lord Diamar to fight alone?"
Geomachus asked, a steely edge to his voice. The other Knights Excelsior drew back from the Hallowed Knights, their meeting suddenly chilled by the agitation of their commander.
"It isn't a choice," Morbus told him. "It is our duty. We must find the Lady of Vines. If we lose her and what she carries, then it will count for nothing if we kill 100 Torglugs. The victory will belong to Chaos."
Grimm came close to Geomachus, every step sending pain rushing through his body.
"I know exactly what this burden is to you. We were forced to leave our own Lord Celestant guard us. What we fight for is greater than any of us. The God King has charged us with preserving the Radiant Queen. While Alariel lives, there is hope that Gyron can be reclaimed. If she falls, then the Blight of Nurgle will never be expunged from this realm."
The Knight Venator shook his head.
"However wise the words, it doesn't change the shame of leaving a comrade behind."
"Nor should it," Morbus told him. "Let that feeling drive you on. Let it sustain you when you would falter. Let it goad you to the supreme effort. Prove yourself loyal to Sigmar, no matter how onerous the burden."
As he said the last, Morbus looked across the white-armored warriors. He could see that his words made an impact upon them.
"Fight to win the war, not simply the battle."
A tremor suddenly rumbled through the ice, cracking the pack and causing fissures to ripple across the surface. Spouts of frigid water lashed upwards as the violent sea erupted through gashes and crevices. Stormcasts were thrown down by the quake, clawing at the ice as huge slabs split and rose. Knights Excelsior and Hallowed Knights rushed to one another's aid as the terrain tore itself apart. Beneath the groaning, popping clamour of the breaking ice, Grimm could hear the keening song of the Lady of Vines. The branch wraith was near, or at least near enough for her melody to reach them. That fact, however, brought him little solace. She was rousing the Jotunberg once more, goading the winter giant into catastrophic agitation. He was certain only grave duress could have driven her to such action. Perhaps Torglug had already vanquished Diamar and was closing upon his prey. It wasn't her willingness to sacrifice all the Stormcasts and Sylvaneth still upon the Sea of Serpents that unsettled him. He knew such an act, callous as it might seem, might be necessary to preserve the Queen Seed. No. It was the drain upon the fading energies of Alariel that such action would demand that concerned him. He had heard from Morbus the toll it had taken for the Lady of Vines to rouse the Jotunberg before. Morbus, as though reading Grimm's mind, caught hold of the Lord Castellant. "The song is different," he told him. "I can sense the soothing enchantments woven into the harmony. She isn't trying to rouse the Jotunberg. She's trying to put it back to sleep."
Grimm shook his head. "Why would she do that?"
Tegras had an answer. "We must be near the other shore by now." He pointed towards the fog on the horizon, indicating its relative thinness. Dimly, the Stormcast could see shadowy shapes behind the misty veil, the outlines of massive statues. "She is trying to give us time to get across the ice."
"Her duty is to protect her queen," Grimm almost growled.
"Maybe that is what she is doing," Morbus observed. "Maybe she needs us to help her do just that."
Grimm swung about, stabbing the butt of his halberd into the shivering ice to steady himself.
"Tegras, I must call upon you to take wing once more, into the storm. Try to seek out the Lady of Vines."
Grimm could feel the tremors running through the ice growing worse. Right or wrong, they couldn't stay where they were. He had no choice. They would strike out for what they hoped was the shore, while Tegras went aloft to locate the branch wraith. Sigmar willing, they would all find what they sought. The Lady of Vines stood amidst the ancient Menhirs. The great standing stones had been raised long ago, before even the Jade Kingdoms were realized. The earliest inhabitants of Gyron, the first to rise from the soul pods grown by the Radiant Queen, had raised these megaliths. The massive pillars acted as a capstone, a fulcrum for the magical vibrations flowing through the realm. With the right rituals and the proper alignment of stars, the Menhirs would harness those arcane energies and allow them to be tapped by those wise and powerful enough to wield them. The branch wraith's distress didn't allow her the time for lengthy rituals or propitious celestial alignments. Her need was immediate, and therefore she was forced to desperate measures. Using a small portion of the force within the Queen Seed, the Lady of Vines began to siphon the residual energies that had seeped into the stones themselves. The ancient megaliths cracked and fractured as she drew the magic out of them, great slices of stone sloughing away as the rock began to crumble. From the branch wraith's entourage of dryads, a harmony somewhere between moan and song rose into the air. The tree creatures clasped their wooden hands together, forming a ring around the Lady of Vines. Wisps of light streamed from their trunks and branches, weaving themselves around the branch wraith and forming an ethereal skein about her. The magic the Lady of Vines conjured now was of a more reserved and restrained sort than the mighty enchantment that had roused the Jotunberg. There was no necessity for sacrifice, no need to drain the essence of her followers. It was enough for them to surrender themselves to the radiance of the Queen Seed, to lose themselves for a moment in the sacred vibrations of the Ever Queen. Bit by bit, a change began to occur within the circle of Menhirs, a shifting of the air that wasn't unlike the distorted shimmer of a heat haze. Through that phantom veil, the shades of a distant landscape began to take shape. Instead of the grey moorland over which the Menhirs loomed, it seemed the boughs of some great woodland were becoming visible. With shocking abruptness, the Lady of Vines silenced her song, and let the energies she tapped into flow back into both Menhir and Dryad. The phantom landscape winked out, evaporating back into nothingness. The radiant glow of the queen seed flickered, but quickly began to burn with a greater light. The branch wraith cradled the soul pod in her clawed hand as she turned from the standing stones and gazed back down towards the shore. There, making their way through the piled tumuli of tribal kings and the windswept statues of a forgotten race, a file of shapes was making its way towards the stone circle. A gladness flared within the branch wraith's being when she saw some of the Silverneth from Athelweard marching towards her. She'd thought them lost on the ice, condemned to destruction by the Jotunberg's tremulous anguish. To see them again eased the burden of guilt she bore for commanding them to stay behind while she fled with the queen seed. Her cheer soured when she saw how few were left. Many had fallen to the blades of Torglug and his warriors. Many had been thrown into the sea by the dying Jotunberg. Others marched with the Silverneth, the silver-hallowed knights and other Stormcast Eternals wearing the white armor that Knight Azeros Diamar had worn. The Lady of Vines was surprised by the sense of relief she felt when she saw Lord Castellant Grimm leading them. She was even more surprised by the concern she felt for his condition. Grimm's armor was rent in several places, scarred and dented by vicious blows. His battered warding lantern hung at his side, and even his griffhound was limping. More, she saw the grisly stump where his hand should be. Her arcane senses told her of the ghastly putrescence that afflicted the wound, filth of such malignity that even the Stormcast's vitality was being sickened by it. In all the ages of her existence, the Lady of Vines had never felt sympathy for anything human. She considered the Quickbloods to be too rash and impetuous, too individualistic to ever be trusted. They were too brief, their lives vanishing with such rapidity that they soon faded from memory. The Stormcast Eternals were a different breed. She understood that well enough. Perhaps they truly did enjoy an existence as lengthy as that of the Silverneth. Perhaps they could focus upon needs and goals that took centuries to achieve. Yet for all of that, they had seemed to her as kindred to the tribesmen of the Jade Kingdoms. Now, as she looked upon Grimm, as each step nearer the circle made his injuries and suffering clearer to her, the Lady of Vines repented her earlier disdain. The Hallowed Knights had suffered and sacrificed much to protect Alariel. They had fought harder even than the Silverneth to defy the Tree Cutter. Their ordeal was nowhere more manifest than in the battered shape of their commander. The Lady of Vines stepped away from the Ring of Dryads, motioning to them to remain where they were. With rapid steps, she climbed down to the tumuli of the old kings and met the advancing survivors.
"Fortune favors you," the branch wraith greeted Grimm. "I had just begun the rite that opens the gate to the path of the purified. Had your arrival been much later, you could not have crossed the doorway."
Loras Grimm looked up at her, his gaze grave.
"My lady, if there was the least chance of slipping away, you should have taken it."
He groaned and leaned against his halberd, trying to suppress the cough that shuddered through him.
"Our lives don't matter. The only thing that does is keeping the queen seed safe."
"The Tree Cutter has been left behind us on the ice," the branch wraith declared.
She pointed at the winged Stormcast in white armor who marched in Grimm's party.
"Your Diamar met the Plague Lord in battle and gave me the chance to escape."
Her tone dipped with reverence.
"I don't think he prevailed, but he did keep the enemy from pressing his pursuit. With the Jotunberg's throes splitting the ice, the plague hosts will need another way to cross. For the moment, we are beyond reach."
"All the more reason why you cannot delay," Grimm said. "Torglug cannot have the queen seed."
"He will not touch my queen,"
the branch wraith hissed, her branches shifting angrily.
"But keeping her beyond his reach is a duty I share with Sigmar's chosen."
She pointed up at the circle of menhirs. At her gesture, the Sylvaneth began climbing towards the stones to join the ring of dryads already there.
"Your warriors must join my people,"
she told Grim.
"All of you must stand within the circle, that I may bring you to the path of the purified."
She hesitated, then pointed to Grim.
"And you must stand with me at the center of the ritual."
Bidding Talon stay behind, Grim let the Lady of Vines lead him up to the stone circle, allowing her to help him when his step faltered and he had to use his halberd as a crutch. She kept looking at the stump of his hand, at the crust of filth that was sending streams of plague into his veins. She tried to hurry him, recognizing the bite of Torglug's axe and remembering much too well how swiftly its foulness had brought low even the oldest forest spirits. It was astounding to her that Grim had endured this long. Drawing Grim into the middle of the ring of dryads, the Lady of Vines took his hand in hers. She saw the look of awe and shock that filled his eyes when he felt the warmth of the queen seed pressed into his palm.
"You have given much to defend our queen,"
the branch wraith told him.
"Now let her give something back."
She had no more words for Grim. Again the enchanting song rose from her, drawing out the energies of the menhirs and the Sylvaneth. The skein of power surrounded her, spilling down into the queen seed, reaching out through the ley lines to once again summon a phantom landscape, to create a pathway between distant places. The branch wraith only partially observed the opening of the way. Another part of her watched the effect of the Everqueen's power upon the warrior who now held her soul pod. Her arcane sight could see streams of emerald fire racing through his body, burning away the black rot of Nurgle. Grim was being purged of the contagion, scoured of it in both flesh and soul. Then the Lady of Vines saw something even she hadn't anticipated. The healing power of Alariel was doing more than simply burning away the infection. A green stalk spread from the mangled stump of Grim's wrist, thickening and expanding until it became an entirely new hand. Even the battered warding lantern hanging from Grim's belt was shining once more, its lingering enchantment restored and revitalized by the radiant queen. As the ritual continued to gather force, Grim's entire being was bathed in the glow of the goddess. The Lady of Vines became anxious, wondering how much of the divine power he could withstand. Carefully, she retrieved the queen's seed from his hand. Just as carefully, she raised a gnarled finger and pointed to the shimmering forest beyond the stone circle. The Sylvaneth began drawing away from the ring, filing out into the phantasmal forest. Grim hesitated, but a gesture from the Lady of Vines had him shouting orders to the Stormcasts, and the warriors followed after the Sylvaneth. As her followers and the Stormcasts withdrew, the gateway began to close. The branch wraith braced herself for one last effort. Drawing only upon her own power and that of the queen seed, she forced the slightest crack to remain open. With a bounding leap, she threw herself through the magical slit, hurling herself from the stone circle to the forest beyond. The Sylvaneth waited for their mistress, standing somber and stolid among the slender trees of the woods. The Stormcasts were gathered around Grim, marvelling at his regrown hand. He turned from them when he saw the Lady of Vines appear.
"You have worked a mighty magic," he said, flexing the fingers of his new hand and gesturing at the forest around them.
The branch wraith reached to her breast and replaced the queen seed in its hollow.
"We will need mightier magic still," she said. "We must set upon the path of the purified and cleanse ourselves of any trace of Nurgle's taint. Where we would go, we must bring nothing of the enemy with us."
The ice cracked and spluttered all around them as Torglug led the last of his putrid Blight Kings towards the shore. Only 7 of them had braved the cataclysmic upheaval of the sea to reach him. The warlord was dismayed that so few of his minions had proven themselves so devoted, but he took solace in the auspicious aspect of their number. 7, after all, was the sacred number of Nurgle. For 7 of his bodyguard to endure was an omen, a sign that the grandfather was guiding his favoured vassal. Small groups of battered, bloodied figures emerged from the fog, drawn towards the noxious presence of Torglug like iron filings to a lodestone, called to him by the noxious blessing Nurgle had bestowed upon him, the diseased mark of the plague god's touch. Remnants of marauder tribes and beast-man war herds, lone chaos knights and mutants, clutches of armoured warriors and clumps of squirming Nurglings, the survivors of the plague hosts returned to their warlord. To the very last they had fought against their enemy, but in the end the elemental fury of the Jotunberg was too much to endure. Now they were falling back to the Deathbloom fields, where at last the giant's wintry hold wasn't so fierce. The decimation of his legion didn't disturb Torglug. He would have expended all their lives to secure for Nurgle the queen seed of Alariel. That they had died by the hundreds without accomplishing the task he'd set them was what worried the warlord. It would take time to enslave and recruit the warriors to rebuild his army, time that would allow the Lady of Vines to slip away and carry the faltering essence of the Everqueen beyond his reach. He couldn't allow his enemy such respite. He had to resume the hunt, maintain the pressure, and drive his enemies to destruction. Out from the snow, the ghoulish shapes of Slaugoth Maggotfang and the remains of his plague coven emerged. The sorcerer leaned heavily upon his staff, and even the eldritch glow in his eyes seemed faded. Torglug didn't know what magic Slaugoth had worked to aid his legion, or what spells had exacted such a toll from the man. All he knew was that however great the sorcerer's exertions, they hadn't been enough to bring him victory.
"You are daring to come creeping back to me!"
Torglug snarled at Slaugoth. He raised his axe, pointing the blackened blade at the sorcerer.
"Your vaunted magic is failing me, spell spitter! You are letting Radiant Queen be slipping through my fingers!"
Slaugoth drew back, his hands grasping at talismans blackened by Morbus's lightning. Better than any of the plague warriors, he could sense the might of the blessing Nurgle had bestowed upon Torglug. Fear fought with anger for mastery of his features as he spoke.
The grandfather offered you the glory of securing his prize. The grandfather gave you this chance to show your devotion to him. The victory would have been yours, so don't presume you can escape the blame for failure. You have come far, but the higher you rise, the further you can fall.
A roar of inarticulate rage bubbled up from Torglug's bloated bulk. The warlord lunged at Slaugoth, seizing the weakened sorcerer in his fist and lifting his obese frame off the ground. Blightlord Gorgas and the other putrid Blight Kings converged upon the plague coven, cutting two of them down in a heartbeat. The adepts retaliated with a skein of spells that reduced one of the bodyguards to a smouldering heap of mush and left the rest reeling. Torglug drew Slaugoth towards him, holding the sorcerer so close that the warlord's horn stabbed into his cheek and drew a trickle of brown sludge from his pierced flesh.
"You are being useful in past. What are you doing for me lately, hmm? What are you doing for me now?"
A cruel smile flashed across Slaugoth's face, exposing the masses of worms wriggling between his teeth.
"I can keep the rats from gnawing your miserable bones."
Drained as he was, Slaugoth exhaled a blast of noxious wind, sending the sorcerer's scale smashing into the fog. The veil of mist and snow rolled back, revealing the shingle of the shore. Hundreds of bodies were strewn across the beach, cast there by the turbulent currents that raged beneath the ice and through the great rifts created by the Jotunberg spasms. The dead of Torglug's legion, both beast and man, spat up by the sea of serpents as though the very waters were disgusted by them. Others were far less discriminating, swarming over the dead, tearing weapons from cold fingers, stripping armour from icy flesh, cutting hunks of meat from bloated bodies, was an army more loathsome than even that which Torglug had led. A mass of humanoid rats had descended upon the wreckage of the plague hosts, scavenging off the carrion. The warlord recognized the horns and white pelt of the vermin who led the swarm of Skaven. It was the same plague priest he had beaten down in the tunnels. Poxmonger Cricknit had rallied his routed minions and driven them in pursuit of Torglug. The vermin had intended to simply plunder the leavings of his army, but finding the legion so weakened, he knew it wouldn't be long before they exacted a far more vicious retaliation for the invasion of their tunnels.
"Kill me, and they will pick their fangs with your bones," Slaugoth said.
Torglug threw the sorcerer down.
"Same fate is being hanging over your head,"
he snarled.
"Whatever magic you are having left, it better be good."
Across the ice, Torglug saw the Skaven pointing at the plague warriors, squealing in their shrill voices. The white-furred Poxmonger Cricknit leapt atop the shoulders of a massive rat man and began shrieking commands to the scavengers, who dropped their loot, glancing around in uncertainty. The increasingly vicious harangue from their priest made them draw weapons and form a rough battle line along the shore. Torglug sneered at their cringing display of bravado. It was seeing how few his warriors now numbered that was giving the vermin courage. Driven by the prospect of more plunder and the promise of an easy victory, the Skaven rushed out onto the ice. A squealing, squeaking tide of gnashing fangs and rusted blades charged towards the decimated legion. Torglug's fist tightened about the haft of his axe. He could see Cricknit goading a pack of frenzied plague monks straight towards him. Like its minions, the Skaven priest was eager to slake its vengeance.
"If you are doing something, be doing it,"
the warlord snarled at Slaugoth.
"I know what I'm doing,"
Slaugoth chortled, eyes agleam with ghoulish mirth.
"My spells have hidden the blessing the grandfather has bestowed upon you. Too late will they discover what you've become."
He pointed at the white-furred plague priest.
"You will need to take that one
alive."
Torglug nodded. Some of the Skaven were now reaching the survivors, hurling themselves at the warriors with rabid ferocity. More and more of the vermin were rushing onto the ice, lured by the smell of blood and the din of combat. Thrusting their way through the swarm were Cricknit and its rabid retinue. Torglug noted that the filth kept well behind its troops, content to let others finish the warlord for it. The sight and smell of Torglug caused the Skaven to falter. Closer now to the Plague Lord, they could sense the terrible power that squirmed within his flesh, the awful might of the Plague God. A censer-bearer, more frenzied than the rest of its ilk, scurried towards the warlord, poisons billowing from the weapon it bore. Torglug waded through the noxious cloud, withstanding fumes that would corrode iron and melt flesh. His axe came chopping down, tearing through the rat man and splitting it from crown to groin. The bisected halves of the Skaven flopped onto the ice. Torglug laughed as he trampled the corpse underfoot and charged towards Cricknit's plague monks. A squeal of horror rose from the Skaven as their glands spurted the pungent musk of fear. The easy prey they had hoped to overwhelm now looked far less appealing to them. Cricknit raised its voice in a panicked screech, torn between the urge to run and the fear that it would be trampled by its own bodyguard should it turn its back to them. Torglug eased the plague priest's dilemma. Calling to his putrid blight kings, he drove into the mob of Skaven, his black axe shearing through them in a riot of gory havoc. The ice steamed with the rank black blood of slaughtered ratmen, verminous carcasses strewn in his wake. Each step, each cut, brought him closer to his enemy. The plague monks broke before the malign fury of Nurgle's champion. Shrieking in terror, the robed ratkin fled back towards the shore, but there was to be no escape for Cricknit. Cutting down the last robed vermin between them, Torglug rushed the priest. Cornered by its enemy, Cricknit lunged at him with its sword, faking a slash at the champion's neck before treacherously stabbing at his belly. The serrated blade pierced Torglug's gut, eliciting a squeak of triumph from the Skaven. The squeak ended in a choked gargle, as the stricken warlord seized Cricknit by the throat.
"If it is being so easy to be killing me, I am being dead long ago,"
Torglug snarled at his terrified prisoner. Carrying the struggling ratman as though it were no more than a child, He marched back towards Slaugoth. He wasn't certain what use the sorcerer had for Kriknit, but he trusted it would be something unpleasant. The sorcerer bowed before his master, touching his head to the ice in a show of abject devotion.
Oh, the grandfather has truly shown you his pestilent favor, he gasped in delight.
Slaugoth could feel the bilious energies seething within Torglug's flesh and spirit, energies which he could use to work mighty spells for his master.
Your plague hosts have been diminished, Slaugoth told Torglug. We will need a new army to settle with the Branch Wraith and her guardians.
The sorcerer laughed, one of the worms tumbling from his teeth.
Fortunately, it is in my power to summon the troops we will need. Have your men gather up the dead, our own and those of the Ratkin. Pile them upon the shore. I will call upon the grandfather's own household to provide us the warriors we need.
Torglug nodded, unable to doubt that the sorcerer could do exactly what he promised. The frightened whimpers of Kriknit recalled to him the existence of his captive. He held the trembling plague priest towards Slaugoth.
And what am I doing with this?
Slaugoth picked the worm that had fallen from his mouth off the sleeve of his robe. He stared at the writhing creature.
I will commune with the grandfather, seek his wisdom, learn from him where the branch wraith has gone.
His eyes narrowed as he leaned down to stare into Kriknit's face.
When I learn where she is going, we will use the Skaven tunnels to get there first. I am certain our ratty friend will be happy to help.
Torglug shook Kriknit by its neck.
If he isn't helping, then he is learning death comes slow to those who are defying me.